get yelled at by him. This isn't the first time you've had this issue. You should know about this by now.
And he's doing it from?
Remotely. Okay. Should be working. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear me.
Hello. Hi, everybody. It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I give a shit. We are sponsored by Netflix today because you like to watch TV and we're an all media company. So I think you should go and download House of Cards. It's really good. Matthew, have you ever seen House of Cards? Have you watched it? We talked about this last time.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay. I have to read to you this invitation about our All Borough Holiday Party. So we're having a All Borough Holiday Party, a scavenger hunt that launches on Saturday, November 28th. That's the first Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend. And between November 28th and December 12th, listen to Radio Free Brooklyn for clues on where to find scavenger hunt items at local businesses throughout Brooklyn. The person who collects the most items will win the grand prize of a brand new Massey single-speed bicycle from Velo Brooklyn Bike Shop. Do you know what a Massey speed bike is, Matthew? No. I'm sure it's a really good one. There will also be two runner-up prizes and swag awarded daily, but you have to play to win. Prizes will be awarded during Radio Free Brooklyn's holiday party at Beast of Bourbon, 710 Myrtle Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, on Saturday, September 12th from 2 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned to Radio Free Brooklyn for more details in the days and weeks to come. All right. Hello, everybody. I am so glad you're here. And I'm here with Matthew Weinstein today. So this is going to be a meta radio session because let me just give you the background. Matthew was on here in September. And we had a lovely, it was fun, wasn't it? Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It was an interesting, informative, it was pretty decent. And Matthew, on a friend of mine, Carol Kino, who subsequently has since been on the show, had a discussion about some of the things that I could do to improve my show, my role as a broadcaster or an interviewer. And so Matthew graciously, Carol wrote the notes down. You guys were at a party, Matthew?
Yeah, I know nothing about broadcasting, so I just probably should have shut up.
No. Get close to the mic. Okay, so here's the thing. Matthew, you're just being totally generous to me for doing this, to give me notes. I mean, seriously. So don't.
All right.
Don't hold back.
All right.
This is the point,
okay.
Right? So anyway, but you and Carol had a nice
we had a fun talk.
And the feeling I got from Carol was that it was a very supportive talk.
Oh, yeah. No, I wasn't. You weren't being trashed.
No. But before we get started on that, I just wanted, Matthew and I were talking about the show that he has up through December 12th at, and now I'm going to blank out on the name of the gallery.
Jacob Lewis Gallery.
And the show is wonderful. And I think it's a good, from what I can tell, I think it has like a good range, sort of a good range of your work. What do you think of it? Why don't you say something about the show so you can like describe it instead of me trying to fucking do it?
Well, it's a new animated film and two sculptures and three paintings. So it has representatives of each way that I work in it.
And the address?
Oh, 521 West 26th Street.
And that's December 12th, was that the
right
day?
It's up till December 12th, yeah.
And what is that, a Saturday?
I don't know.
Look it up on your calendars, folks. So anyway, I just wanted you to know that that's still going on, and I really enjoyed it. And I'm glad that I was saying to Matthew also that I was really glad that we got to spend time on the radio and hear about his work and his attitude towards it, so that when it came time to actually see the work, I was able to bring a lot more to it. And I enjoyed that. But I've told you that, Matthew. You don't need to hear it again from me, because I think part of the problem is, you know, that let's not talk about, well, let's find out what the problem is. Okay. So, Matthew, this is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was thinking that what I would do is read the notes that Carol sent me. This is hilarious. This is like me begging you to trash me.
Okay.
So I'm going to read the notes, okay, and then we can discuss, you know, what your feelings were.
Sure.
Yeah. You're awesome for doing this. Okay. So anyway, Carol said that, and this actually is all kind of consistent, adds up to a picture to me. I think it will to other people too. So you and her sort of talked about Marc Maron maybe as a gold standard, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is true to me too. I'm actually really obsessed with his podcast, so I thought that was interesting that you guys even, that you connected that. And you said things, I'm just going to read the list, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I'm okay.
No, it's okay.
Oh, it's okay.
I'll just see what Carol. I didn't know she was taking notes. She's like a spy.
You didn't?
I don't think I remember her taking notes.
Oh, really? She's a good reporter.
Really good memory.
She's also been really really great about my career. I just want to really like give her a shout out. You know how supportive she is? It's really like. Well, we all know how.
Yeah, she wrote about me once.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really great to have that support. And Carol and I have dinner sometimes and stuff, like I said.
So what's on the list?
Marc Maron, What the Fuck, More Traction, Less Nice, Not Mean, What the Fuck Are You Talking About, More Challenging, Not As Respectful, Our Kindness Will Come Through, Do More of Them, Get Higher Level People.
Oh, that sounds so snotty.
I did point out that you done Micheline Thomas.
Yeah, you did.
Carol defending me.
Yeah.
Make it more about what she wants from the guests. Less talk, but be more demanding.
Mm-hmm.
Artists respond well to demands. He would have been funnier if I had been more challenging.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you explain that to me?
Well, because artists don't... You don't go into it because you want approval. You know what I mean? I mean, you do. You know, you're always sort of in this childish world of kind of your dealer is your parent and the collector is your parent and you're trying to please people, but reality you're really not. You don't really need their approval. You just need it practically because you need to sell work and get opportunities. But fundamentally, artists are really thick-skinned and we're not that nice with each other. I mean, we're not nice. We're just, we don't hold back words.
Mm-hmm. So did you think that I was giving you like a lot of polite approval? Did you?
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah.
Interesting. And you know what's funny?
And all I can do is
Kramer
say thank you.
Said it too.
You know?
Kramer said it too. See, that's what was interesting is that David Kramer, you know
yeah,
him?
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
He kind of agreed. He kind of on his own said the same things. So I have this problem. And actually, when I was, I was thinking that maybe it was an authority thing. That I have a problem with you. Oh, I think I have a problem with you and guys like you, because I think there's something about you that represents like a male authority figure.
Me?
Like with Tom.
Uh-huh.
Tom, the president of the station.
Yeah.
So I think that I get nervous, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I'm worried. I feel like, yeah, I'm worried that you're not gonna like me.
I always get people who say, oh, I always thought you were so intimidating. I always get that.
You do?
Yeah, I've always gotten it. I've gotten it ever since, like, college. And it's nothing it just is. Maybe it's because I'm tall. I have no idea. But
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty unconscious of why it would be, because I don't feel like I'm any more critical or standoffish or engaged than anyone else.
Right.
I think when I'm actually being really friendly, I'm at my most intimidating because I think I'm very abrupt. I'm like, hey, I like your work. And people look at me like I'm going to – like it's weird to say that.
Hmm. Yeah. I also think that you were really different than I met. I imagine you'd be more – I don't know, sharper. I mean, like – maybe I imagined you to be – like I found after you were here for a while, I felt a lot more relaxed. But in the beginning, I mean, I didn't know you. And also I realized like the gay thing, the fact that I didn't know if you were gay or straight and then when I asked you that. So I was probably a little uncomfortable about that because, you know, that's – you know, like I was thinking about it before I asked you.
Uh-huh.
So that was probably distracting.
Uh-huh.
But I do want to get over my fear of authority. And I think that's really the challenge. So can you help me understand, like, what I could have done or what – can you give me any ideas?
Well, just more pointed questions that are more – I can't describe it. When you listen to some interviewers, they have a way of seeming like they don't quite approve of their guest.
Ah,
which is what Marc Maron does, and that's why they're so good, is because the guest is trying to
get them
please him, because
right.
He has this way of being very sarcastic or critical of them. Not mean,
right.
Just challenging. So it allows the guest to become – to shine more, because anyone who's being interviewed obviously is – they wouldn't do it if they didn't want attention. You know what I mean? Like no one who's being interviewed is just accidentally there. Like you say yes to the experience because
right.
You want to shine
right.
In that
right.
Hour.
You know, that's interesting. So like I think one of the things that I was thinking about when I re-listened to the interview was that when I was asking you about drawing.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that? Like
yeah.
You, I found out that you didn't draw and
right.
That you paid people to draw.
Yeah.
Well, I mean there's a part of me that was thinking, what? You don't fucking draw?
Well, I mean, I draw with my machines and my paints and my whatever. I make things, but I don't take a pencil and draw things. I really don't enjoy doing that.
Right, and that you hire people.
Well, I have one assistant. I don't have a whole – it's not like a whole thing. I have one
right.
Assistant
right.
Who does airbrush.
Right, right.
So he does the stuff that I can't do because it's so detailed that I don't have that skill. I don't have that steadiness in my hand. And nor do I have the patience. So I know exactly, like in my work, I've given myself the job of being a creative director of my own multimedia company. Small as it is, in my deluded mind, I think I have a multimedia company and I'm slowly working my way through projects in different media. So really, like any company, whatever it takes to get the thing done, you know, so I've done a show of drawings, those index card drawings,
mm-hmm.
which were totally handmade, hand-drawn,
mm-hmm.
hand-printed.
Right, right, right.
But then I can do something which is – I'm not touching all that much.
Right, right. I guess like what I was thinking when I was listening to it again was that I – because we're talking about disapproval, and I actually did judge you there
uh-huh.
In my own mind because I was like, what? What? This guy doesn't draw, and then he gets somebody to draw for – he just hires somebody? Where's he getting the money? What a spoiled brat. So actually, that is what I was thinking. And the thing that's really interesting is that I was – so this is good because I was afraid to say that to you.
And see, I like being called a spoiled brat. That makes me happy because I think it's funny.
Right.
And I know you don't mean it. In a gross, resentful way. You're doing it in a way which is lighthearted and funny.
Right.
Which is exactly what I think you should have done in the first place.
Huh, interesting.
There's a lot to object with any artist. I mean, any artist who's making some kind of living is selling things for too much money, has too much free time, and is too lucky.
Right.
I mean, it's not about resentment, but it's like about how did you pull this off?
Yeah, no, exactly. But I also think it's kind of weird. I mean, what I'm wondering about is, like, how much is me, how much is you? Because, like, what happened was, what I'm hearing you say is that when you expected me to be, like, critical of you, I think.
Well, not
critical. Or just poking
just
at you more.
A little more bad mommy.
A little more bad mommy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so, Marc Maron is very bad daddy. like disapproving parent. That's what he does. And it works really well for his very egotistical and fragile entertainment industry guests because they then want to please him.
Right.
So they're really funny or sincere.
He takes charge more.
Yeah.
So I need to take charge more.
Actually, on the drawing thing, it's interesting because I'm doing a project with my friend Inka Essanay. She draws.
She's incredible.
She's the drawing person. So we sit on the floor of my studio, and we've been doing these things where I put something through my machine and make an image or do whatever I do, and then she does her amazing brush, like her line over it, and then I go back to it. We've been coming up with these really, really cool images, and it's funny because in the end, it is that we're both drawing. We're just both drawing in completely different ways. She's drawing with this incredible well of talent.
Right.
And I'm drawing just with my brain, basically.
Right.
You know.
So what I was sort of challenging, or what I was sort of thinking in my head, was like, how do you get the work done?
Uh-huh.
You
mean on what level?
If you can't draw it, then how do you get the work done? You know, or how do you pay for it?
I've made
for your work.
Yeah, through my work, through being smart about certain investments, through just doing what artists do. I mean, honestly, when everything at the end of the year, when my taxes are done and everything, I have no income.
I'm sure.
I mean, everything goes into my work, and it always will. Because even if I made more money, I would do a longer animated film, or I'd make more of the paintings, or I'd do whatever. I also love employing people because it's thrilling to actually support someone's work.
Yeah, totally.
So it's addictive because you're like, wow, this guy's like able to sit in my studio and have a really cool job with flexible hours and make cool stuff with me.
And then fun to have somebody else around.
The reason I stopped being the kind of artist I used to be, which was just purely going into my studio and making my paintings, was that I actually don't enjoy that kind of being alone and being without kind of a constant conversation. It's not in the end. It wasn't who I was. I mean, I need a lot of alone time, but in terms of work, I like to work things out verbally with someone else there and discuss it all. Like they're there all the time.
Right. You would have been a great creative director in advertising.
Well, that's what I am, basically.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So let's talk about your relationship with your mother. What was that like? Because I want to see.
She was at my opening. Did you meet her?
No. But I want to understand how much is me and how much is her.
What?
So what was your mom like with you? Was she like totally approving or very critical?
My mother?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was growing up?
Yeah.
She was a mother. I mean, not all of my choices were embraced by her because I don't think anyone wants their kid to be gay. I don't think anyone wants their kid to necessarily be an artist, even though she was pretty psyched about my being an artist. But it was kind of easy because I started to show when I was 24. So it's not like she had to wait for 10 years for me to get something going.
You did pretty well right away.
Yes.
And that helps, too.
That helps.
Yeah. Yeah, that helps a lot.
And she's my mother. I love her. We have a past of, like, we argue. We like each other. We still argue, you know.
Well, how about the approval? How much approval do you get from her?
Oh, God.
Growing up.
On many levels, probably way too much as the youngest boy. And also, my mother is into art, and I was into art. And I think maybe a lot of the reason I do art is because my mother used to take me to galleries in Soho when I was a kid.
Right.
So we'd go to Sonnabend and Leo Castelli, and When I started showing at Sonnabend, it was like a big deal, I think, for her because she was partly responsible for that.
Right. It felt good to her. You get a lot of approval from her.
Yeah.
Does it sometimes feel like it's maybe because she's your mother doesn't count as much as you would hope or like, or maybe, you know?
Well, yeah, it's totally different when your mother likes your work and when someone who likes your work. I mean, of course, it's thrilling when someone just comes into your gallery
and
doesn't know you and likes your work.
Right.
And I always think that really, I usually think that I have a superstition that if I meet the person, that they're not going to like my work. So,
oh, weird.
Yeah, I always feel like I screw it up on some level. Like I say something that might sound flip but isn't, or I'm too sincere, or I'm too whatever. I just don't like
that role. You're not comfortable in that role. You want them to respond as
well. Yeah, I just want them to respond. And once I know I have some approval, then I'm really happy to meet them. But going into my show to meet someone who doesn't really know my work and mm-hmm. hasn't met me makes me really self-conscious, because I feel like, why do they want to meet me? Am I somehow part of this equation? Like, if they like the work, would it matter if I was, like, in jail or something? I mean, it doesn't – you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's also really interesting that your being, your presence, interaction with the person makes the sense of what they say about your work. Like, it's interesting that you have that perception that the work that you have influence over, how whether you know that you're affected by that at yeah. all, because I don't think every artist is.
Well, and I'm very idealistic, so I always think it should just be the work, and I know better, but I'm still very idealistic.
But that sounds very intellectual to me. I think it's something that you just emotionally have a sense of when somebody compliments your work, or you know, the perception that somebody has after they see your work, after they meet you. Do you ever resent people, you know, your mother's approval? Did you ever resent it? It felt too easy or something like
no.
that?
No. No, I always felt, because she's not goofy about it.
Right.
She just shows up. I mean, every show I've ever had in Europe or anywhere in the United States, my parents would come, and my father has passed away. But my mother comes to a lot of stuff. She came to my last show in Berlin, you know, and it's fun because I feel like I'm offering her an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of giving back. I mean, does she drive me crazy a bit? Well, she's my mother. I mean, I can't, you know. But my friends drive me crazy too. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a touchy person. So
it's the other people.
Yeah.
It's the other people. So, do you respect? I don't know. Respect's the right word, but do you take seriously like your mother's evaluation of art in general? Like, do you agree with her opinions on work?
We actually have very similar taste in art. Very similar. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. she likes things that are really bold, and I do too. She's always liked that's why she always brought me to galleries, really good galleries, because she always liked art that was a significant, bold statement.
Hmm.
I'm this exact same way. I have the exact same taste that she does in art. Like, she never calls anything bullshit. She always gives it a look. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. So so her comments mean something to you.
Yeah. You know that way that Jews trust culture? I mean, it's sort of like one of these weird Jewish things.
So.
Like, we trust, you know, certain kinds of Jews. We have mm-hmm. this unshakable trust in culture. And mm-hmm. for good or for bad, she's a representative of that, and I am too. Like, it's very rare when I look at art and I just say, this is just total bullshit. I kind of trust that it is something.
So do you get her opinion on things? Would you go that far?
Yeah, we go to galleries together.
No, but I mean, like, on your work, would you say?
Oh, no.
Do you ever ask anybody else, or do you always kind of know what you want?
I don't ever ask anyone's opinion. I was actually joking about it the other day. I mean, the only time I ask opinions is from certain friends who work in video. And I have them to see the videos, because video needs to be looked at by people, because
right.
there's things in the videos that maybe I don't catch, little
right.
glitches or things that look awkward. And since I'm trying to create a very seamless sort of commercial feeling in my videos,
mm-hmm.
I need to have a little like test group. But it's funny, like the other day someone came to my studio and she started critiquing something, and I just said, you don't have to do this. You're off the hook. You're just here to look. I didn't
right.
ask you what your opinion
right.
and
right.
I know you're smart, but
Did you not want to know what she thought?
I
or?
Didn't care. You know, I'm 51 years old, and it's like I'm not hanging around waiting for someone to approve of me. It's like if I need help at this point, I just should hang it up.
You know, it's really funny. You and I are really – you know what? That was another thing I was thinking also, is that our approach to making art, or our approach to art in the being artists is really different, because I always ask for feedback, and you are – And I don't know if that's a confident – I don't know if you can say that I'm confident or not confident. It's just maybe I need to know how people perceive it. But you have a vision that you're very directed about, right? We were talking about that last time too. Is that what it is?
Well, because people say things like, I don't like this part or I don't get that part. And I'm like, well, that's the part that is the part. Like, that's just there. You know what I mean? It's not like an accident. Like, you don't get it because maybe you don't like it, or maybe you'll go home and get it later. But, you know, it's just, for me, everything in my work is so considered that I don't really know how to respond to that.
Yeah, but it's also really funny that you go in with such a, I don't know, it seems like, well, it seems like you have a pretty strong idea about what you want, which is really funny because I guess it's different than I work. But what I was going to say is I think our relationship to actually being artists is really different because what I was listening to was sort of interesting, how you wound up like becoming an artist through working, you know, you wound up, you're clearly an artist, but you found yourself there later in life. I mean, not as a child, not as like you, weren't.
Yeah.
Whereas like, see, for me, I think that, you know, I had a troubled childhood and this was something I could do to sort of, it was occupational therapy that eventually came into something that probably actually literally saved my life, that I could do this stuff and not go down a dark hole. Whereas I think with you, it seemed like that the dyslexia was a real issue and that this was something that you could feel really certain about because there was no right or wrong. And I think for you, the way that you got to it, also by seeing other artists doing art and thinking, well, you know, I could do this.
Yeah.
That you wound up being an artist because I think one of the things that you were trying to solve for yourself is feeling like you knew what you were doing in a way.
Well, the thing that I always try to do is, I mean, not everyone has to work this way.
No.
But I work in a way where I try to do something completely mine. And every time it veers into someone else's work, I zig my work away from it. So that's my whole guiding thing. I just always wanted to do something that people would look at and say, I've never seen that before. Mm-hmm. And I get that a lot with my work. People say, this doesn't look like any other art, which is annoying because it would be easier for them to place me if it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I do also get satisfaction out of it because in the end, it is what I wanted initially. Mm-hmm. So it's also why I left painting, because there were just too many paintings in the world. And I thought, what can I do that... How can I base my work on something that's completely original and new? And so I was looking at 3D animation technology, and I was like, nobody's
right.
doing this. Nobody's looking at this as an art form. They're looking at it as commercial stuff or stuff for kids.
Right. So would you say that that makes sense, though, that part of what you wanted to do with your work was to find something that was just yours and not right or wrong and that you could feel like your domain and that you were really, really good at? And
yeah, and, you know, success or failure, I don't even know what those things mean in terms of art. At least I'd know that I kind of, you know, satisfied my own requirements for what I wanted to make, and that I was not going to be an artist that people would say, like when I write reviews for Art News.
Right.
And I often will have an artist and I'll say like so-and-so. And that's a lot of artists are like that. And then I'll write about an artist and I'll think there's no like anyone for this person. They're just this self-enclosed system that is either interesting or not interesting, but you can't validate by saying, oh, well, they're like this person, therefore, you know, they're just validated on their own level, which is like pretty much what I always wanted to do.
Right. See, that's really interesting to me because I think that is like, you know, not a typical way, or like that's what makes you want to make art. Right?
Yeah,
is that
that's
right?
What gets me to the studio.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. I mean, that's not something that... See, I think I figured out something there.
Yeah?
I want reinforcement for this.
See, I'm not going to give it to you because you're just... I can't.
Why can't you fucking give me some reinforcement, you douche? You're a fucking douche, and that's what you want me to say to you.
Well,
you know?
Because I wouldn't be here if I didn't think you had a brain, so I'm not surprised that you figure something out. Like, if I thought you were an idiot, I wouldn't have come back. So if you figure, if you figure something out, then I'm not going to applaud you because you should figure things out. You're a smart person.
So you have expectations of me that I don't have of myself, probably.
I have high expectations of people in general. It's a big flaw. So I tend to think if you're smart, then you should just do smart things.
See, this is so threatening. You're so threatening to me. See, I can't figure out if I need to work out my issues with everyone as a you know, in my interviews or with people like you. I think part of it is with people like you, because you represent my dad. My dad, who was very, very bright, knew he was very, very bright and totally disapproving and stoic. I mean, not even stoic, just not present.
Mm-hmm.
Never talked to me. Never went anywhere with me. I never felt comfortable alone with my father. Like, mm-hmm. It made me feel awkward. And he would say shit, like when I'd come show my work, he'd say things like, you call that art? So, is this another one of your crazy ideas? And then he would say, he'd call me like, I forget what exactly, dumbhead or, you know, make
But
me,
I don't insult people. It's not my
no,
way.
No, I'm not saying you do that, but this is what right, I'm dealing
right.
with. So I project that onto you. That's what I'm saying.
Right. You see it as an insult because I'm just sort of sitting here expecting you to be what I think you are.
Or whatever, which I don't expect you to see. You, in your mind, think that I'm smart and you think I think I'm smart.
Yeah,
right?
I think you're fine with yourself. You seem that way to me. So you're not the kind of person to be like, no, you're so great. And I can't stand
Yeah, you hate that.
Like, well,
you
I hate people like that. And I particularly find that it's a thing that women do more than men.
Oh, see, it is a woman thing.
Well, it's not a woman thing. There are no women and men things. I just figured that the way women are socialized, they look for approval in more of a...
overt.
Yeah. I don't know why, but like a man would never, you know, most men, men rarely say, is that okay?
Yeah,
you know,
right,
it's
right.
It's like that Amy Schumer skit about women saying, I'm sorry all the time.
Yeah, right.
You know, like
they,
it's this female, it's not gender linked, it's socialization. But men are like me, err on the side of arrogance, where we just sort of say, well, of course you're smart, I'm here. Like, what a jerk I am.
I think
you know you're smart because I'm, like, so great to be here. Like, it's total asshole behavior.
That is such an asshole thing.
Yeah,
but,
it is.
But, yeah, but it were, it were, well, no, I mean, that's who you are.
Yeah, I'm an asshole.
Now, see, that's why it's so frightening for me, because I deal with, like, at the end of the day, like, I have no confidence. I mean, I really don't. I've worked on it for years and years and years, but like deep inside, that's my default. And I'm okay with it because I understand it and I don't take it personally. And I've spent my entire life, honestly, trying to compensate for it and not ask people if I'm doing okay and all that stuff.
Right.
So I've managed it, but I think when I'm in a room with somebody like you, it's just like, he thinks I'm an asshole. He has no respect.
Well, you just have to fake it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that.
And that's what everyone else does.
No, I know.
I mean, no one goes into, I get terrified before a show goes up. And when it is up, I feel completely embarrassed by the work. I look at it and I'm like, I think I like it in my studio, and then I hang it. And I feel this rush of embarrassment. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? Standing in a room with all this stuff that I've made, like some awkward, fat bar mitzvah boy, like, you know, that I once was. Like, I just feel totally – and all these people are coming over and saying hello. And I'm like, I'm really happy they're there. But I feel like a big, spoiled idiot. And that's because none of us really think that we deserve –
whatever.
Things. I mean, most of us are self-deprecating in our innermost thing.
I guess so.
But, you know, sometimes you just have to put on, like, you know, a blazer and go out and fake it.
Yeah. But I'm also trying to be very real. That's the other thing.
Right.
Like, I don't want to have any faking in here. If you're an asshole, I want to know about it. And
but only by faking confidence will you ever get it out of me. Because I'm not going to reveal that unless you're... you can show me that you're in control of the situation.
See,
otherwise, anyone will just walk all over you. And why would I say, why would I insult myself? I mean, to be funny, which is true. But, like, why would I actually do that if I wasn't asked to?
Right. So I should ask you to insult yourself.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Now let's practice or, some exercises.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just did it. I just did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I just admitted to being kind of a dick. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
so
awesome.
So you did it. You did it already.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about criticism? So when you see your work, you say you feel like it's – do you feel that your work is good or not good when you have it hanging up? You're worrying about it?
I think it's good. I mean, I wouldn't hang it if I didn't think it was good, but that doesn't make me feel any better about it, if that makes any sense. Thinking
so
it's
is
good,
it the situation? You know. Is it the situation that you've invited all these people there to look at your work, or is it more like how you feel?
I feel like when you're doing a show, when I'm doing a show, mm-hmm. I get all wrapped up in it, all excited about the work, all mm-hmm. excited about inviting people, mm-hmm. and there's a dinner, who's going to mm-hmm. come, and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so into it, and then the show's up, and I feel like maybe this might be, you know, is this just a totally like delusional fugue state that I've been in? And, you know, like, what now? What have I done?
Mm-hmm.
Liking my own work on certain levels does not make me feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's well, you know.
How do you grow from? How do you grow then? How do you grow from criticism? Or
well, I mean, I grow a lot through the few people I know who I talk about my work with, who I really believe they have insight, and I mm-hmm. also grow from. There's something in the reason showing is important for me is that there's something intangible that you feel when you have a show up.
Right,
you can feel whether you're communicating,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not talking about sales uh-huh. or reviews or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something very intangible about it, and somehow mm-hmm. the world tells you what's working, what's not working.
Yeah, that's true.
Which
about
is to
almost
say you have to
everything.
Listen.
And your haircut and you know, whatever you and like how your house is arranged
yeah.
and things like everything.
And you can choose to not listen or you can choose to listen or whatever, but that information comes at you very slowly.
Right.
And is very distracting for the period the show is up. You're very distracted by that sort of stuff.
You know, you are in a kind of privileged position in that you've been very successful since you were 24, right?
Yeah, I mean, off and on. I mean, it's not been like some, you know, I mean, there's been two major recessions. You know, I've changed galleries. I've left the art world for a few years. I mean, but what I've always had is opportunities. Whenever there's always something coming up.
And also, you know. Like, you had a major show when you were 24, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge period of development for a lot of people where that want to be artists where they're not getting anywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that also must instill some confidence.
I think
in
it's
you.
Actually easier to get a show when you're 24 than it is when you're 40.
No, in a certain way, yes.
I mean, I don't think it was – I don't give myself that much credit for that because I was around. I was writing for Art Forum. I was making some good work. People were curious and – why not? You know, there's a sense of like, why would let's just do this. It wasn't that hard, but it became harder later when you're older, you have these substantial prices, so the mm-hmm. you're more scrutinized
right.
by, you know, you're no longer this fun kid, you're actually someone who's it becomes much harder, you know, as you get older,
mm-hmm.
I think, in a
mm-hmm.
way.
But also, I mean, that whole like there's a certain humbleness to struggle, right?
Yeah, and I certainly got it. I mean, it, you know, in the 90s, the entire art world crashed, and many of us didn't sell anything. All the magazines closed that we used to write for. Everything ended, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of careers ended. So mm-hmm. a lot of us, without fighting really hard, could have also ended up on the scrap heap. I mean,
right.
they were throwing artists out, you know, and only mm-hmm. the ones who said, we are not going to be thrown out, lasted. And
mm-hmm.
that is very humbling
mm-hmm.
when people want to throw you out.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to throw out me and almost everyone I knew. So
mm-hmm.
it's very, very humbling because you think, like, I thought I knew that it was all bullshit, but I didn't really know. Mm-hmm. And I see artists now, and they're having their moment, and they're like 35. Mm-hmm.
They're having their
and
moment, exactly.
Selling things. And I know they know intellectually that this isn't going to last, that they're going to have to someday, you know, retool their work or, mm-hmm. or adjust mm-hmm. to a different kind of level of attention. Mm-hmm. But I know you don't really know until you get the sledgehammer mm-hmm. in the head.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right, right. Okay, so here's one of the things that I am resenting about you. Let's try this. Is that I'm feeling that my role or my connection to art is through struggle, like through my whole life from like when I was a little kid and stuff. And I'm feeling like you waltzed in the middle and like you became successful quickly.
Yeah, I did.
So do you see what I'm saying? So now I'm feeling resentful to you.
I also went to like a fancy college and had fancy professors who all helped me get ahead. They all got me internships
and you're
and
handsome.
Jobs and, well, whatever.
And tall.
I used to be. But I had professors that got me opportunities because I was at a really good school. So,
right.
Which my father taught at. So yeah, there's a lot to kind of like.
Resent.
Know. Yeah.
And do you feel that from people?
Yeah.
Oh, so I probably really resent you is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, at some point, in some way.
Yeah. So what about me? Is there something that you envy or resent about me?
I don't envy people that much. I envy specifics about people, like the artists that got opportunities that I would like. You know, like they get this project and I'd be like, God, I could, not that they can't do it well, but mm-hmm. I would really like to get my hands on that budget and that site and do that thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I don't get, it's not my thing. I'm too.
So you don't compare yourselves to other people that much?
Well, only in the way I just said. I feel like they must be working harder than I am because I don't know, I didn't even know about that thing and they have it. You know
oh,
what I mean?
I see.
I'm so absorbed in what I do that really, I'm not the most like, aware person in the world. Like, I'm mm-hmm. not that sensitive to vibrations. I kind of just plow through.
Right.
So, you know, I don't get kind of like wrapped up in that
right,
kind of
right,
stuff.
Right. Right. You know, it's really funny.
Too interested in myself.
It is really funny, though. It is like definitely, there is definitely an element of like, you know, and this isn't a cartoon. This is a bit of a cartoon here. I hope you know that. Right.
What
we're this whole
yeah,
conversation,
yeah, yeah.
But there is a bit of like white guy resentment. I've been hearing so much people like there is definitely. I haven't had the opportunities because I'm a neurotic, unloved. I mean, this is so awful. I'm not. This sounds like so victim-y, but that's not what I'm. That's not. Hey, I've gotten a lot done, and I've. It's taken a lot of initiative. But you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like there's a lot of stereotypes going on in here, like where there's some resentment where you're like a white guy with all the privileges.
Yeah.
Which is so funny, right?
Well, I get it. I understand it and I know it. But also, I don't know. There's nothing I can do about it. I mean, I think a lot of like liberals wish to sort of rain of hell on their own heads for having, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, I know. My husband goes through it too, believe you me.
I'm just born without, I'm not prone to guilt.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, you know, it, and I'm not also thinking like, I don't think I'm that, I mean, I give work to charities. I try to help people. But I don't think I'm a very good, I don't try to balance it out with good works or anything. It's just,
I
don't know what, I mean, when I give something to a charity or when I help a friend, it's because I feel strongly that I should do that. But it's not like I'm like, I've had so much and they have nothing. I mean, I don't.
No, but you know what? I feel like, okay, so then my work is more. Well, then my work is more empathetic. That's what I'm thinking like, well, his work is great, but you know, he hasn't suffered as much as I have, and his work doesn't have the empathy and the depth and the way of connecting with people that my work does.
But you're only looking at suffering in a very, very material way.
Emotional.
You know.
I mean, it's pretty stupid using the word suffering when we're talking. Like I did, you know, there's Syrian refugees and shit like that. I mean, ridiculous. I feel like an asshole for even saying it. But
no, it's...
I mean, but my parents were really pretty abusive, okay? Mm-hmm. And my brother was pretty fucked up. And I have a lot of really, like, horrible... I had a really difficult... my parents were really mean to me. I did not get any love or very little love and security. And I had a lot of depression and shit like that. And, I mean, my life is amazing now. Right now, my life... I am... You know, I'm very grateful for the life I have and the work I make. I'm very proud of it and all that other shit. But the thing is that I feel like that I went through a lot to get to where I am now. And I feel like that gives me that the reward for that is this capacity to connect with other people.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You know,
you're probably right. I think, though, genetically, judging from the sort of type of men that run in my family, I could have any kind of upbringing and I would still sort of be equally self-involved, you know?
Yeah, well...
I mean, I'm not like wildly self-involved. It's just I've chosen a profession that just is about going into a place by myself controlling everything. And I don't think... There's not an artist in the world who isn't completely self-involved, or there's not an actor in the world who isn't. And,
no.
You know.
But it's funny. Like, you are definitely – like, I definitely put you in a type. And the thing is that I really do think makes – and it's not just you. It's your stereotype that makes it easier. And I've seen this in advertising agencies – is that ability to focus on your own work and not you know, I might not give a fuck sometimes what people think, but I'm still wildly aware of it.
Yeah.
I can't tune it out.
Well, it's very hard to tune out. But I think that because of whoever I am or for whatever reasons, I just was born with a certain level of arrogance mm-hmm. where I just really don't care what people think. But I am good at choosing people who I ask their opinion.
Right.
So I just look at it more pragmatically.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think you're very pragmatic with people.
Yeah, I am pragmatic.
Yeah. But you... so we have 10 minutes left. So are there any notes that you can give me? Did you get anything? Did we learn anything today?
Yeah. I think you were better.
Yeah?
Yeah. You were sharper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to call you an asshole. That was actually fun.
And that was the fun part. That was the fun part. That was my whole point. That was actually the fun part.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I learned something. And... yeah, why do I give a shit what men, you know? Like, I don't need to care anymore.
No, I don't think you should.
No.
I mean, you're doing your thing, and I think you just... But
I have a lot of opportunities, yeah.
But you can't not care. If you care, then you care. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like it's like those meditation things when they say empty your mind, and you're like, that's not possible. That's never going to happen. That's ridiculous.
So what kind of things do you and David argue about? Like, do you have emotional arguments? Like, what would he say about you?
We frustrate each other.
In what ways?
We both get frustrated about things and then we can't communicate and we just walk around the house being frustrated and then we drive each other insane and we start, you know.
So you don't say anything. You both shut up, clam up?
No, we kind of get in these fights, but we don't tend to discuss. It's not like you make me feel like, you know, it's not a lot of that.
Uh-huh. It's just more...
It's more like...
More white guy fights.
Yeah, it's like, God, you're fucking annoying. Like that kind
Were
of thing.
Were you on sports teams?
No, I have no... I don't, no. I did musical theater.
Right, right.
And got called faggot and stuff like that.
Oh, God, yeah. Musical theater, yeah. See, that's what I was thinking about, though. Amy Schumer, you know, because she, when you said her... Like, she wouldn't give a shit. And I actually, you know, I did this TV pilot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And... I don't know what's going to happen with it. I still don't know. But and it's for like local TV, but not network. But so I was thinking, you know, Amy Schumer wouldn't give a fuck about like when I walked in to do it. Like Amy Schumer wouldn't give a fuck. She'd just be like out there doing it.
Or she would, but she would just plow through it, which I think you can't be funny without on some level having great vulnerability, just like any artist. I mean, every artist has to have great vulnerability. Like you're born with that, and that makes you very sensitive to certain sorts of vibrations. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a lot of artists can tune out vibrations of those closest to them, but they mm-hmm. don't tune out other vibrations that they're very, very sensitive to. And it's all, we're all sensitive to something. But I don't think you can be a good actor, artist, writer without having a real sense of vulnerability.
I agree. But I also think expressing vulnerability brings you closer to other people.
It does. I mean, it's sometimes I think that people use it as a trick. You know, like I think I think women sometimes use it as a trick.
I agree.
Like to get things. It's not something men can use, because when a man expresses vulnerability, it's unattractive. But when a woman does, I think men who want women to be passive find it very charming. I mean, it makes me ill.
When women express the kind of vulnerability. I express vulnerability, but I don't think I'm very
But you say it flat out, so it's good.
Yeah, and I'm also very judicious about who I express it to and how I express it. And I'm not afraid of it. That's the thing. I'm not fucking afraid of it.
So that's different.
Yeah, because I'm not – I have, like, shame. Put it out there. Hello?
People can just use it sometimes to play people. And it
women, yeah.
You know.
But those are particular types of
women.
And men
play people with other equally noxious things.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Also, like, the art – like, most of the art projects that I do are very much self-initiated. They're not, like, in an organization and stuff like that. So – it's very different. That's the only way I'm comfortable is operating outside an organized world where I have to be accepted into it, because then I don't feel like I have control. I think I do need control, but I think I need to make it like my thing.
Right.
Right from the beginning. Not like I'm doing this work at your gallery, because then I wind up feeling sometimes like they're not going to like it.
Uh-huh.
Or I have to think about that.
Right.
So do you ever think about that or?
No. I mean, I've shown with galleries and I feel like they wouldn't show me, or they wouldn't put all this money and time into me if they didn't like the work. I mean, sometimes they can't sell it or sometimes whatever, but I think it would make no sense to say, well, we're showing this work we don't like, especially when it's always involving video and a projection. I mean, it's expensive to do a show of mine.
Right.
They have to help me pay production or whatever.
So they have to make a commitment going in.
Yeah, so I never think they don't like the work. I get a little nervous if it's not commercially successful, because I'm like, God, they put all this money into it, and now it's like sitting here. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like a little crazy about that, but no, it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
But I do work. I mean, I have a show up now, and I think, like, God, I mean, I see people posting things and of shows, and mine's not on there, and I'm like, why did they not like it? I thought they liked mine. It's like stupid-ass shit, but it's the rabbit hole, you know? It's like you go down it every once in a while.
Hmm. So what makes you question your work? Like where you're going or if you're doing a good job? Does that ever happen?
Yeah,
it must
happen. All the time. I always, as I said, when I have a show up, I look at it and I feel completely embarrassed. Like maybe this was just a, you know, I have a fundamental worry that I've just been very, very wrong from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's based on principles that are perhaps just ridiculous. And then I look at what I do and all the effort I put into it and all the time, money, and work and other people's commitments to me. And yeah, you feel like weird. Like, is this just am I wasting everyone's time? Is this just nonsense?
So has that ever happened to you where I mean, you've had that anxiety, but has that actually really ever happened?
No. No, it's always.
So you know, even when it's happening, you know, like, well, that's not going to happen because it never happens.
Yeah, but it's funny. You're in your studio. You're in your own personal little weird world, and then you know you're not tested by reality that much. I mean, when you have a job, you're always tested by reality because people are supervising you or criticizing you. You know, I get a review once every whatever. I mean, it's not like there's a steady stream of people coming and telling me what to do.
No, it's true.
So it's easy to think that I could just be like, you know, just this nut in my studio, like doing all these stupid things, and that everyone's out there going like, what the fuck happened to him?
So anyway, this is we got 3 minutes left, and I just so this is interesting. This is going to give me a lot to think about, I think. I'm group therapy. That's the whole thing with group therapy.
You do group therapy?
Every week for years, like over 10 years.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of that is about sharing vulnerability and stuff like that and learning how to feel safe doing that. But it's also, you know, you're not really challenged in a certain way to be intimidated by the other people because
right.
you can call them on it.
Right.
You know, and it's in a safe place. So I have to feel like I'm going to feel like I'm always in a safe place. What I have to do, you're inspiring me. I'm going to be like, fuck it. I am not focusing on other people. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say, because group therapy is helping me understand my feelings in the moment. You know, you mm-hmm. do say them in the moment, which is great. And so I just need to do that and, like, fuck what everybody else thinks. Because if I said, if I have to stop. Yeah, because, like, I was worried about offending you, and you probably would have really liked that.
Yeah, well, because you're naturally a likable person. So you're not, I wouldn't think you were really trying to. I think you were playing with me. And that's the funnest thing.
I have pissed people off, though.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think that hurts a lot, too, because I was supposed to do, like, I was planning on having a monthly show at this club, and one of the comedians complained about me doing the therapy that she didn't like what I said and she wasn't prepared, and then, like, they told me I couldn't work there anymore.
But then you're probably on a good track then.
Yeah.
You should do exactly whatever you were doing then.
Yeah.
And keep doing that.
And it has worked out well since then.
Good.
It's true. So I want to keep, you know what I'm supposed to do now? I'm supposed to encourage people to listen to the show after this, which is called Ink and Something. This is new. This is season. Do you know you're on season two now? You're like my first guest on season. Yeah, we've been doing this 6 months now.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so season two. And I had it out. Now I can't see it. Fuck it. I'm going to have to learn this.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like a really interesting show that's on after this one that involves reading and writing. And it's by somebody whose last name I can't pronounce. And I should probably have them on the show and, like, you know, talk to them about it. Like, find out what's going on in mm-hmm. the other parts of the... Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.